For 13 years, Lee Strobel was the award-winning legal editor of the Chicago Tribune and an outspoken atheist. His wife's conversion sent him on a 2-year investigation to prove Christianity was false. Two major questions confronted him. Did Jesus really claim to be the Son of God? And did Jesus really rise from the dead? Today, you'll hear what he discovered. Lee has written 3 best-selling books documenting the evidence that persuaded him to become a Christian: The Case for Christ, The Case for Faith, and The Case for the Creator. Join us for this special edition of The John Ankerberg Show.
Welcome to our program. We've got a great one today. My guest is Lee Strobel. He's a graduate from Yale University with his law degree. And then for 13 years, he was the award-winning legal editor of the Chicago Tribune. All during that time, he was an atheist. And in fact, somewhere along the line, circumstances led him to investigate the evidence concerning Christ, not to prove that it was true, but to disprove it. But in the end, the evidence persuaded him to come to Christ. We're going to hear that story today. He put that evidence that that brought him to Christ into his book, The Case for Christ, which has sold over 2 million copies worldwide. He's also written the book, The Case for Faith, The Case for the Creator, and his latest book is The Case for the Real Jesus. Now, people are reading his books all over the place, and in fact, I just saw not too long ago in People magazine a picture of Matthew McConaughey, and he was walking on the treadmill, and he had a copy of your book, The Case for Faith. What was that all about?
I was as shocked at that as anybody else, John. Sure enough, there in People magazine, he's working out and reading intently this book, and and you look in the cover, and it was The Case for Christ. And I thought, isn't that great that he's interested in those issues? And I have no idea where he's at spiritually, but I hope that the book's helpful in terms of, you know, understanding the historical evidence that there is for Jesus.
Did I hear that's going to show up on Inside Edition, too?
Right. They were doing an item on what celebrities are reading.
They got your book. There's another story you were telling me about. Yeah. You got a phone call not too long ago,
right,
and the folks would be interested in that.
I got a phone call. It says, Strobel. I said, yeah. He says, evil. How you doing? I said, evil. It's Evel Knievel. You remember the daredevil motorcycle jumper? Well, he tells me in March he was on the beach and felt God speak to him, not audibly, but in his spirit. And God said, Evel, I've saved you so many times, you have no idea, but now I need you to come to me through my son, Jesus. And he thought, what does that mean? I generally believe in God, sort of, but Jesus, I don't understand. So he called Frank Gifford, the sportscaster, who's a friend of his, and said, Frank, what's this Jesus thing all about? So he sent him a copy of my book, The Case for Christ. And sure enough, Evel Knievel has absolutely been born again. He is a new believer in Christ. He and I become friends. We talk on the phone, and he calls me up, and he says the same thing. Strobel, Evel, how you doing? I said, Evel, you got to change your name now that you're a Christian. Don't call yourself Evel anymore. Make yourself the daredevil who used to be known as Evel Knievel.
Tell the folks when he got baptized, gave his testimony, what happened at the church.
He was at a large church. He gave his story. The pastor threw out his sermon because his story was so powerful, just such an authentic response to the love and grace of God. He said, I live such an immoral life, and God, in his grace, forgave me. I've got a new life. And he was so passionate about his new faith that the pastor throws out his sermon. He says, that was the sermon. Now, if anybody else wants to come up, receive Christ, and be baptized, go ahead and do it. And over 2 services, over 700 people came to faith in Jesus Christ because of Evel Knievel, of all people. And he marvels at this, and he's so humble, and he says, you know, I feel like in so many ways I've just wasted my life, but I'm so thankful I found Jesus before it was too late. And if he could use me in any way, then I'm just honored.
I heard he invited you to Florida to go on a motorcycle ride with him.
He said, come on down to Florida. I want to take you for a ride on my bike. I'm thinking, yeah, okay, that's a pretty good excuse
not to go to
Florida.
You haven't been there yet, have you?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, I want to hear your story, and I think the folks need to hear the story because, I mean, you were a real trip. You were a hard nut to crack, and the stuff that you believed about God. Take us back to maybe Yale and going into the Chicago Tribune and the mindset that you had as a straight atheist.
Well, you know, I first started to consider myself an atheist when I was 16 years old. And that was a lot because of what I was taught in school in terms of evolution, the origin of life. They told me, though, life can come about by itself, doesn't need any supernatural creator. I believed it and started to consider myself an atheist. I later took a course from a guy who was a spiritual skeptic who was teaching me on the New Testament. And of course, he convinced me that you can't trust what the Bible says. And so I consider myself an atheist. I married young, my high school sweetheart. I was 20, she was 19. She was agnostic, she was kind of in spiritual neutral. I was more hostile. I'd never taken the time to systematically investigate the evidence one way or the other. I kind of thought, you know, my knee-jerk reaction was that the idea of an all-powerful, all-loving, mm-hmm. all-knowing creator of the universe is just absurd.
Right.
It's not even worth my time to check out.
You said God didn't create people, but you thought people had created God to soothe their own fears.
Exactly. People needed this benevolent jelly bean of a grandfather in the sky so that if they died, they could at least believe they'd go to heaven. I thought that's what that was all about. And the bad part about that, John, is, you know, Bertrand Russell, the famous atheist, once said, if there is no God, there is no right or wrong. And, you know, that's how I lived my life. It was really, I made up my morality as I went. Day by day, I would make it up. Because my number one value was to keep myself happy at all mm-hmm. costs. I mean, I was all about pleasure. I was all about, you know, it was just a narcissistic life. And, you know, the honest truth, and I, you know, it's not something I enjoy talking about, but I lived a very immoral and drunken and profane and self-absorbed and really in many ways self-destructive kind of a life. I had such issues with anger because it seemed like no matter what path I would go down or where I would search, I couldn't find this happiness, you know, that, mm-hmm. that I wanted for my life. And mm-hmm. I remember one day my wife, who had started to go to church because she had met a Christian, and this really made me mad, she said she was going to church that day, and I was so enraged by this. I reared back and I kicked a hole in our living room wall, just out of rage. And my wife's crying, our little girl's crying, and you know, if you'd asked me then, why are you so mad? What's all this anger? I don't know that I could have told you, mm-hmm. but I just think it was the dead ends that butting my head up against the inability to find that which would bring me the satisfaction that I was after.
Yeah, you said that Allison, your daughter, when she would see you coming home, what would she do?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the ugliest, you know, thing I can say about my life.
She was 5 years old.
Yeah, just under five. And if she was playing on the living room floor with some toys and she heard me come home through the front door, her natural reaction was to pick up her toys and go in her room and close the door.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is she going to be drunk again? You know, is she going to be kicking holes in walls, going to be screaming and yelling and swearing? You know what? It's just quieter in here. It's just tranquil in here. That is so hard for me to say because I love my kids, but that's the truth about who I was.
Then something happened with your wife.
Yeah, she met a friend who shared Jesus with her. My wife investigated, and she came up to me one day about 9 months later and said, Lee, I've made a big decision. I decided to become a follower of Jesus.
What'd you think?
I thought divorce was the first word that coursed through my mind was, that's it. I didn't sign up for this. You know, she's going to turn into some weirdo, some uh-huh. holy roller, holier than thou, and, you know, spend all her time on Skid Row serving the poor or something. And I honestly thought that was the end of our marriage. But one of the biggest surprises of my life was in the ensuing months, I expected to see all these negative things happen. And instead, I began to see positive changes in her character and her values and the way she would relate to me and the children. And it was winsome and it was attractive. And so one day she said, why don't you come to church with me? And I said, you know what, I'm going to go and get her out of this cult, you know, that she's involved in. So I went to a little church. I was meeting in a movie theater called Willow Creek Community Church. Mm-hmm. The guy gets up to speak. I don't think he was even shaving yet. It was a young guy named Bill Hybels. Mm-hmm. And he gave a talk called Basic Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And John, he shattered almost every misconception I had about Christianity. I mean, he talked about he talked about Jesus. He talked about the cross. He talked about atonement for our sins. He talked about all this stuff. And I heard it all. And I walked out that day saying two things. First of all, I was still an atheist. He had not convinced me that day that God exists. But secondly, I realized, if this is true, this has huge implications for my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to use my journalism training, my legal training, and I'm going to systematically investigate, is there any credibility to Christianity or any other faith system? Mm-hmm. I looked at other faith systems as well. And, you know, how do they stand up to scrutiny? And, you know, a lot of me, John, because of the immoral life I was living, part of me didn't want it to be true. I wanted to find out it wasn't true because I did not want to be held accountable
for the way I live my life. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, as a journalist, I tried to say, wait a minute, keep your biases in check. Go into this like an umpire in a ball game. Call a strike, a ball, have the guts, have the decency to follow the evidence wherever it takes me, even if it's to a very uncomfortable conclusion that God exists.
You were even tougher than that. I mean, what was the motto you had in the Chicago Tribune newsroom
yeah,
there?
Yeah, right. Yeah, we used to pride ourselves at our skepticism, you know, and we used to have a policy at the Tribune, try to get at least two sources to confirm a fact before we print it in the newspaper. So we actually had a sign in our newsroom that said, if your mother says she loves you, check it out. You know? How do you know? Maybe she's lying.
Yeah,
maybe she's
sources.
Making it up. You have any evidence? You have any proof? I mean, that's the kind of skeptical DNA that I am wired with. And so as I embarked on this whole investigation, honestly, John, I thought this was going to take a weekend. I thought, give me a couple of days. I will rip this to shreds. I will find all the flaws, all the holes in this. It'll take me the weekend. It'll be fine. Well, I began to investigate, and as I did, I would begin investigating an issue, I would look at it, and other religions, fascinatingly, would fall by the wayside. I mean, it frankly was not that hard to find the death blow to a lot of these other faith systems.
Mm-hmm.
Christianity was like that old punching doll you had when you were a kid, the punchy bag, you hit it and it comes back every time.
Right.
It seemed like no matter where I would probe, no matter where I would challenge it, it would respond with affirmative evidence that was compelling and it was and it was powerful.
How did you decide where to start when you investigated Christianity? What drew your attention?
Well, you know, there's so many issues.
Yeah.
You know, the messianic issues, the prophecies, so forth, lots of things. But if I could boil it down to two issues that really are the bedrock of my investigation, because I think this is a bedrock of the issue of who is Jesus, is number one, did he ever really claim to be the Son of God? A lot of people these days say that he didn't. Richard Dawkins, in his book, The God Delusion, skeptic, atheist, says, there's really very minimal historical evidence that Jesus ever even claimed to be the Son of God. Well,
right.
That's what I thought. And then secondly, if he did claim to be the Son of God, did he prove it by returning from the dead? Because I had done a lot of investigations when I was at the Chicago Tribune, and we did some of mental health facilities. And I'll tell you, John, there's no shortage of people in this world who will look you in the eye and tell you with all sincerity that they're God. Well, we don't believe them. Why? Because there's no corroboration. There's no evidence to support it. If Jesus made the claim that he is the Son of God, that's one thing. But if he proved it, if he backed it up, if he authenticated that claim by returning from the dead, that's pretty good evidence. You come back from 3 days in a grave, that's pretty good evidence you're telling the truth.
Yeah, one time I was in a mental health facility and I walked into the room and the guy says, he told me straight face, he said, do you know that I'm the second son of God? And I said, no, I didn't know that. How do you know? And he says, well, God told me. Another guy across the room said, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
But listen, hold on to that. We're going to get to the evidence of those two points.
Sure.
And we're going to take a break. We'll come back and we're going to hear the evidence that persuaded Lee. Stick with us. You won't want to miss this. All right, we're back. We're talking with Lee Strobel. He was a solid atheist, working at the Chicago Tribune for 13 years as the legal editor. And one day his wife came to know Christ, and it started him on a search to actually prove these beliefs were wrong. But Lee, tell us the rest of the story here. The fact is, you said there were two facts that you went after, and what were they again?
First one, did Jesus claim to be the Son of God? And then secondly, did he back that up by returning from the dead?
Mm-hmm. All right. How'd you go about it?
Well, the first thing I did, John, I thought, well, a good historian probably wants to go to the earliest sources. And so I thought, well, what's the earliest biography of Jesus? It's the Gospel of Mark, which most people believe was the first of the Gospels written. It was based on the eyewitness account of the Apostle Peter. So I open it up, and the first thing I notice is that Jesus, the most common way he refers to himself is not as the Son of God, it's as the Son of Man.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, case closed. He never claimed to be the Son of God. He's just saying, I'm the Son of Man. I'm just like you and everybody else.
Right.
That's what I thought. And then I delved deeper. And what I found out is that when Jesus referred to himself as the Son of Man, he wasn't just claiming humanity, he was claiming so much more than that, because what he was doing was applying to himself the description of the Son of Man that's found in the Bible, in the Hebrew Scriptures, the Old Testament, in Daniel chapter 7. And if you look there, what you find are divine qualities to the Son of Man. That is, He comes to judge all of humankind. He has sovereignty, complete sovereignty and power. He is worshipped by all people. Only God is worshipped. His kingdom will last forever. These qualities that you read in Daniel chapter 7 are divine. And so what Jesus is doing is applying that to Himself and saying, I am more than just a man. I am the Son of Man. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, okay, wait a minute. Maybe there's more. One of my favorite examples of what He said, and this gets missed by a lot of folks, I think, in Mark chapter 6, is where Jesus is walking on the water. And mm-hmm. everybody knows that story. And most Bibles translate His words as saying, fear not, it is I. And I delve deeper, and what you find in the original Greek in which the New Testament is written, what Jesus actually said was, fear not, I am. But what is I am? That is the way that God revealed Himself to Moses in the burning bush in Exodus.
Yep.
And so all of a sudden, He's making another claim. And then it becomes even more overt in His trial before Caiaphas, the high priest, where He just asks him point blank, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed One? And the first two words out of Jesus' mouth are, I am.
Yeah, we need to slow that down. Are you the Christ? That's the Messiah.
Right.
Okay. Are you the Son of the Blessed One? They wouldn't say God because they just didn't do that in the Jewish culture. The fact is, but that's what it meant. Right. Are you the Son of God as well?
Right.
Double header. He says, I am. And then He adds something that goes even worse than that.
He does. He says, and you will see Me on the right hand of the Mighty One and coming in the clouds of heaven. That's coming in judgment. That's coming to judge humankind, which is ironic, John, when you think about it, because in effect He was saying to Caiaphas, oh, excuse me, you think you're trying Me? Quite the opposite is true here. And so how does Caiaphas respond when Jesus, and by the way, that is a reference to Daniel chapter 7.
Right.
He's applying that Son of Man to Himself. And so how does Caiaphas understand what He says? He declares blasphemy. Why? Because Jesus is claiming to be God. It was clear to him, and it's clear as you read through the biographies of Jesus, how this theme just repeats itself. In John chapter 10, verse 30, Jesus says, I and the Father are one. And the word in Greek for one there means one in essence. And so how does the audience understand what Jesus is saying? They pick up stones to kill Him. Why? Because they say, you, being a mere man, claim to be God. Mm-hmm. They understood perfectly what He was saying, mm-hmm. and they were going to kill Him for it. So, I mean, I walked away from this, John, saying, wait a minute. Jesus at least clearly made the claim that He is the Son of God. That's clear. Now, the next question is, did He back it up? Because mm-hmm. anybody, I could claim I'm right. the Son of God. The question is, does He have any credentials to back it up? And it's remarkable, John. This is back in the earliest records we have about Jesus. This is not some legend that developed in the century or so after He died, which is what I thought. The idea that He was God, that He was claiming to be more than just a human being. I thought this was stuff that of legend and mythology that developed a long time later. You go back to the earliest records about Jesus. From the get-go, He's making these extraordinary claims. He's telling parables about the wicked tenants. And the message of that parable that He tells is that He is the Son of God who was sent and killed as a result.
Yeah, I like John A.T. Robinson, the guy that helped start the Death of God movement and is redating the Gospels. He put this thing we're talking about, the Gospel of Mark, as early as 40.
Yeah.
Now, I'm saying, I'm not sure I agree with that, but the fact is if it's at 40, that's 10 years off the time Jesus in His resurrection. I'm saying 10 years, man. These accounts that we're talking about of Jesus saying these things are on the newsstands in Jerusalem there.
Yeah.
And so you've got really solid evidence that Jesus claimed to be God.
Yeah.
Now, when that struck into your mind, what did it do to you?
Yeah, and by the way, we even have earlier stuff than that because we've got creeds of the early church that go back, which had this annoying tendency as I looked at them to affirm that Jesus is the face of the invisible God and it reaffirmed that He is divine. And these are beliefs that go back even before Mark was written.
Yeah. And I'm just saying, how did it hit you when this started to dawn on you?
First of all, I was surprised because, I thought this was going to take a couple of days for me to deal with and I'd be done with it. But the more I looked at it, I thought, wait a minute, Son of Man, he's making a divine claim. Look at these parables He would tell that would position Himself in an extraordinary manner, superior to all human beings. He is clearly saying something that is dramatic, that is powerful, and The audience that he's talking to understood it that way. You know, we can read it today and say, well, how do you get this? But look at how the people reacted of his day. They wanted to kill him because he was making this claim.
All right, we got 2 minutes left. Set me up in terms of the point number two, which we're going to continue on into next week.
Yeah. I mean, I looked at the resurrection of Jesus, whether he backed it up by returning from the dead. And I kind of summarize it in the five E's, I call it.
Okay.
Words that begin with the letter E. First one is execution. Was Jesus put to death? Was he really executed? Was he really dead when he was taken down from the cross?
Yeah, some people today say, no, you revived the tomb. We're going to look at all that.
Right, absolutely. I mean, and then we have early accounts. In other words, things that cannot be the product of legend. We have an empty tomb that even his enemies agreed was empty. We have eyewitness accounts. 515 people encountered the resurrected Jesus. And then we have the emergence of the church right there in Jerusalem, which is inexplicable apart from the disciples of Jesus telling the truth about his resurrection from the dead.
And you systematically went through every one of those points, and which we're going to do in the next program. And the bottom line was what?
Well, bottom line is, you go through that and you weigh the evidence honestly and fairly. And I found myself agreeing with Sir Lionel Lutkoo, the greatest lawyer who ever lived, who won 245 murder trials in a row, either before a jury or on appeal, who was an atheist until he studied the evidence, took his monumental legal skill and applied it to the historical record, and his conclusion was, quote, I say unequivocally that the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ is so overwhelming that it compels acceptance by proof that leaves absolutely no room for doubt.
We've got skeptics, we've got PhDs, we've got kids in college and high school, we've got adults that are just wondering about these things. And they are where you were at, okay? And they're listening to this to kind of tell them why they need to stay tuned for next week.
Well, first of all, I think this is the pivotal issue. And the Apostle Paul said it. If Jesus had not been raised, our faith is futile. We're still in our sins. I mean, this is the issue, the number one issue. Because anybody can make the claim you're divine, but can you prove it by returning from the dead? So I think it's that monumentally important. I think it is the pivotal event of history. And I think if people look at it with an open mind, with an open heart, they make it a front burner issue in their life, and they kind of say to themselves, you know what, when the evidence is in, I'm going to reach a verdict. With that kind of attitude, if you investigate the evidence for yourself, I think it's pretty hard not to come to the kind of conclusion that Sir Lionel Lutkoo came to.
Yeah, all right. Folks, we want you to stay tuned because next week we're going to talk about that pivotal point. Did Jesus rise from the dead? We're going to listen to this skeptic as he worked his way through those 5 points. And I think this is something that you need to hear, and I hope that you'll join us.
For additional resources, log on to jashow.org. That's jashow.org.